Mountains are his bones, the seas his marrow. Then where is he? Why does he not stand before us and speak these words?
And who are you that he would deign to speak with you?
Neferata laughed.
You are maggots, grubbing in his flesh. Be grateful and speak softly to me or not at all.
Bolgu growled, and Tamra felt the winds of death thicken.
Mortark or not, you are in our domain now, and it is you will speak softly, vampire.
Ghosts congealed about him, clutching misty weapons. Bolgu could call the drowned dead as easily as another man might whistle for a hound.
We will not be mocked. We hewed kingdoms from ice and drew down the light of the moon to warm ourselves. We are Rictus.
Then act it, fool, Neferata said.
She spread her pale arms. I am the oldest of the old, and in me is the strength of time out of mind. I have weathered apocalypses beyond your imagining and strangled newborn gods in their cradles. Would you pit yourself against me?
Bolgu opened his mouth, and Tamra wondered whether he was suicidal or simply stupid. The Fen plied the shivering sea with all of its inherent dangers. Perhaps, having faced the horrors of the deeps, the voivode of the Fen could not conceive of someone as fragile-looking as Neferata being a threat. If that was the case, he was in for a nasty shock.
"Be silent, Bolgu, be still,"
Aran said.
"The Queen of Blood is a guest here. We owe her courtesy, at least."
Bolgu subsided with a grimace. Aran turned his milky gaze on Neferata.
"You say you have brought yourself. What do you offer? Will you fight for us?"
"Yes, and more besides. I will teach you to fight, such as you never fought before."
She turned and clapped her hands.
"Adima, Rasha, bring the maggot."
The doors to the chamber slammed open, and two armoured figures, one of them Adima, strode in, dragging a third in chains. Tamra couldn't say when they'd taken a prisoner, perhaps at her steading or even along the way. Some rotbringers had ranged far ahead of the bulk of their forces, acting either as scouts or merely following their debased whims. This one had been hard used by his captors, and the two blood knights were not gentle as they hauled him into the centre of the circle. They cast him onto the floor, and he lay gasping. Tar-like ichor dripped from his many wounds. It seemed inconceivable that he could still be alive. He gurgled something, and Adema's boot found the side of his skull. Tamra flinched at the sound. Adema glanced at her and winked. The castellan had spoken little to her since they'd arrived, which suited Tamra fine. Neferata was bad enough, but Adema radiated a feral need for violence. For her, the only good kill was a bloody one, and all that lived was prey. Tamra had little doubt that if Neferata had not been there, Adema and her warriors would have ridden down the drac after finishing off the Rotbringers.
"Why have you brought this filth here?"
Bolgu demanded. He and the others stared at the chained Rotbringer the way they might a mad dog. Tamra studied the leprous creature with more curiosity than fear. He was not a Rictus, or even a man of the south. His features were too round, too wide beneath the mask of boils and scabs. He stank, but not with the clean reek of decaying flesh. Old tattoos in the shape of weaving vines and ragged leaves marked the visible portions of his flesh, and his teeth were etched with runes.
"To get to the truth, one must dig," Neferata said.
She crouched beside the bound warrior and caught his chin. With the fingers of her other hand, she traced a line down his chest. Thick, oily blood beaded on his flesh, and he grunted in pain. The grunt became a cry as she twisted her claws into his chest. Edema and the other vampire leaned close, eyes alight with interest, their hands on the hilts of their swords. Dark liquid spattered the ground as Neferata indulged herself. Every so often she would pause and murmur a question, sometimes in a tongue that Tamra didn't recognize. It was a soft language, and put her in mind of a summer breeze and rustling leaves. When the Rotbringer answered, he spoke in a similar tongue, albeit more guttural. When he didn't answer, Neferata hurt him, quite badly, judging from his screams. Tamra was surprised. She thought the servants of Nurgle all but immune to pain. Unable to watch for long, Tamra turned away. She looked out through one of the broken walls of the chamber and tried to ignore the screams. Her gaze was drawn to the high rock face which hung over the mandible. Crags jutted like fangs from the looming shape of the wailing peaks, their uppermost tips hidden in the thick clouds which shrouded the skies. The wailing peaks extended from the coast and down into the southlands, stretching like a scar of rock across the body of the north. Besides the usual wild beasts, they were populated by tribes of savage orcs, bone-snapper gargants, and roving packs of deadwalkers. In the fading light of the day, she could see flocks of carrion birds circling the lower crags. As the wind turned, she heard their raucous shrieks and something else besides, a whisper of sound like a voice calling from afar.
Free us.
She blinked. She'd spoken to the dead often enough to know when a spirit was speaking, but she did not know these spirits or recognize their voices. She tried to ignore them, but they persisted, their whispers growing more urgent. She heard a groan and tore her eyes from the distant peaks. The Rotbringer was dead. Neferata stood over him, cleaning her hands with a rag torn from her cloak. Burn it, but be wary of the smoke. They can sicken the blood even in death. She looked around. Well, you heard? What say you?
It changes nothing, Bolgu said. We knew they were coming. What use knowing their names or where they come from?
Knowledge is the key which unlocks the gates to power. I have eyes in every realm, and I see much and learn more. Neferata tapped the side of her head. Knowing the name of your enemies is as good as knowing their minds. I have heard of this Order of the Fly before. They are crusaders, like the ancient warrior lodges of Geist or the Brotherhood of the Ox in Hellstone. They seek to convert their foes by fire and sword.
And?
She smiled thinly. And it means that they will not stop until every last member of your race is dead or in service to the Lord of Decay, fool. A murmur ran through the gathered voivodes. Tamra barely heard it. The dead demanded her attention.
You call, we come. Unbind us. Break our chains. Free us.
Their voices echoed through her skull, flattening all thought beneath their hideous pressure.
Who are you?
She hissed. Neferata glanced at her but said nothing.
Free us. We hear drums, war. Break chains. Break them. Break them. Break them.
Bony fingers snapped. Tamra blinked. A skull, lit by hideous radiance, gazed down at her, and she stumbled back, heart thudding. She had not heard Arkan the Black enter the chamber. Neither had anyone else. If the looks the other voivodes were tossing their way were any indication. She had seen the Mortark of Sacrament only at a distance since her arrival, but every necromancer among the clans could feel the harsh weight of his power beating on the wind day and night. Up close, it was even worse. "What ails you, Tamra Vendrak?" Arkan said as he lowered his hand.
The dead," she began.
Her mouth was dry and her head ached with the muted thunder of their voices.
"Who were they?"
"Do not listen to them, child," Arkan said. Though he spoke softly, his voice reverberated through the marrow of her, and her fingers tightened convulsively on the hilt of Sarpa's sword. "Pay the broken kings no heed. They are oath-breakers and thieves." The broken kings. The name pulsed through her like a deep ache. The last kings of the Rictus, bound in the dark with their armies by the will of Nagash.
"But surely we could use them," she said, without thinking. "We need men. We need armies. Why leave them bound in ice and rock?"
"For spite's sake. They broke the law of Nagash and must be punished, though all the world suffer for it. Without the law, disorder reigns." Arkan studied her with flickering, hell-lit eyes. His skull was worn smooth by time and tide, and his black teeth gleamed in a fixed grin.
"I do not care about that," she said, startling herself. "I only care about my people, about their survival."
Arkan said nothing. His gaze dimmed for just a moment. "That is to your credit." He stepped past her and into the circle. The iron-shod ferrule of his staff struck the ground with every step, echoing like a funerary bell, silencing all conversation and arguments. "You squawk like hens," he said simply. "Shall we flee? Where shall we flee? Across the sea? Where across the sea?" The leash turned, fixing his gaze on each of the chieftains in turn. "Never considering that I stand between you and any route you might take." Silence. From the hasty glances, Tamra suspected that the Mortark was right. Neferata laughed.
"I did try to tell you," she said.
She set her elbow up on Arkan's shoulder and smiled prettily at the Rictus.
"I am the sweet meat, and he the stick. Deny me, and you get him."
"They will not deny you, I think." Arkan tilted his head towards her. "Few can."
"Flatterer," she said.
She pushed away from him.
"Two Mortarks stand with you. Nagash's eye is upon you. This is the moment you were born for, shaped for. This is the reason you possess the embers of power that flicker within you. Would you toss them aside? I thought the Rictus were black iron, but perhaps they are merely glass."
She glanced at Arkan.
"Perhaps we should have gone east with Manfred, eh? To Hellstone? Maybe the princes of the 99 circles are made of sterner stuff."
Shouts of denial greeted her words. Tamra saw her lips curve in a slight smile before blossoming into full mockery. Neferata threw up her hands and turned to face Arkan.
"Do you hear something, Arkan? Goats, I think, stubborn and fearful all at once."
"They are right to be afraid. They are mistaken, however, in the object of that fear." His eyes blazed brightly, filling the air with a shimmering amethyst radiance. "They fear the enemy when they should fear us, O Queen of Blood."
"As well they should, O Prince of Bones," Neferata said.
She turned, scanning the faces which surrounded them.
"For if we so wished, we could simply slaughter them here and then raise them up. If they will not serve in life, they will serve in death."
She cocked her head.
"So then, the question is before you. Life or death?"
"Both."
Tamra hesitated. She hadn't meant to speak. Neferata looked at her and smiled. Tamra swallowed a sudden rush of bile and stepped forwards, drawing her brother's sword as she did so. "I am Drac. What we have, we hold." She flipped the blade and extended the hilt towards the Mortarx. "And we will serve the Undying King in life and in death, for that is the law of Nagash."
"That is the law,"
Arkhan said, thumping the ground with his staff. "Yes," Neferata said, "quite." She tapped the pommel of the barrow blade and pushed it back towards Tamra. "Sheathe your claw, sister. You will need it soon enough." The Rotbringers were within sight of the Wailing Peaks when the bone giant rose up out of the snow with a great rending creak, startling a flock of carrion birds and uprooting a few scattered trees. Festabite had thought it merely a hillock at first, one of the many which dotted these barren lands. Its enormous bones were marked with flickering amethyst sigils and shot through with twisting tree roots, and it wore a battered cuirass of curious design. It clutched an immense kopesh of bronze in its hands, which it raised over its skull. Warriors scattered, leaving behind the chains and ropes attached to the great waystones, which they had only half uprooted. The stones, like the hundreds of others they had torn down on their advance north, had been raised in honour of Nagash. Thus, they were fit only for the toppling, but it seemed they had a guardian.
"Fall back!"
Festabite shouted as the kopesh descended through the curtain of falling snow with a thunderous hiss. The curved blade fell, and a Blight King exploded from the force of the impact. The bone giant wrenched the kopesh free of the bloody snow and swept it out in a titanic arc, bisecting men and beasts alike. The mortal adherents of the crusade scattered in panic. They fled in every direction, seeking to escape the undead monster's attentions as it strode into the midst of the fragmenting column. Supply wagons tipped as panicked animals reared and shrieked as their handlers lost control of them. Armsmen attempted to make a stand, slamming together their shields and extending black-bladed spears. The bone giant strode through them as if they were nothing. Limbs and heads flew as the kopesh thudded down and out. Zealots called out to Nurgle for aid, but their prayers went unheard as the construct slaughtered them. The winter wind rose wild, as if urging the monstrous construct on to greater feats of violence.
"Rally to me!"
Festabite snarled, yanking on Scab's reins.
"To me, fools!"
Few listened, and those that did died soon after. The bone giant rampaged through the ranks, slaughtering any who dared stand before it. The column split in two like a rotting chunk of wood. Festabite gave up his attempts to rally the mortals and drew his rot sword. He thumped Scab's ribs, urging the steed towards the undead monstrosity, as the Rotbringers streamed past, fleeing. Other knights followed suit, seeking to claim the glory of battle for themselves, riding down fleeing armsmen and cultists alike in their haste. Horns blew and bells rang as they closed in from all sides.
"Too slow, Festabite!"
a knight crowed as his steed pounded past Scab.
"Cheat!" Festabite snarled. "You're a cheat, Ogger!"
Ogger laughed and hunched forwards in his saddle, a great filth-encrusted glaive clutched in one hand. He hewed at the bone giant's leg, seeking to bring the titan to its knees. Instead, it twisted around and snatched the unlucky knight from his saddle. It was faster than it looked. Ogger cursed and struggled, but to no avail. Festabite winced as the giant squeezed its claw and popped Ogre's head like a pimple. It then hurled the body in his direction, and he was forced to slide half off his saddle to avoid the tumbling carcass. Scab charged between the giant's legs, and Festabite hacked at the bone. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw the kopesh slice out, leaving a headless knight galloping past, Ikor spurting into the frosty air. Several others struck the bone giant's legs and torso with their spears. The weapons splintered on impact, but caused the bone giant to lose a step. Festabite raced out of reach as his fellow knights wheeled about. The Kopesh thudded down, cracking the earth and throwing snow into the air. Scab stumbled, but retained its footing. Others weren't so lucky. Horse things fell, screaming, and their riders were tossed to the ground. As the bone giant turned its attention to the fallen knights, plague-bearers raced towards it, droning out a baleful war song. Festabite readied himself to charge once more into battle, but a shout from Walgus stopped him. The Blightmaster gestured for him to fall back.
"But my lord," Festabite began. One side, child. Let Papa Nurgle's own deal with this obdurate automaton,"
Gurm said, as his palanquin thudded past, accompanied by an honour guard of plague-bearers and beasts of Nurgle. Walgus's steed cantered towards Festabite.
"Let the herald earn his keep, my friend. We need to reform the column, just in case this is but the opening thrust of an attack."
Walgus jerked his reins, turning his brass-scaled mount about. Festabite followed him, swatting hesitant rotbringers with the flat of his blade. Armsmen reformed their lines, locking their iron-rimmed shields together in a rough wall. The less disciplined elements of the crusade would require more than a few bellowed orders and a swat from a sword to regain their courage. He turned, prepared to say as much to Walgus, but the Blightmaster anticipated him.
"I know. A distraction. It will take us hours to reorganize the column. Delay atop, delay!"
He turned, roaring orders to chieftains, pox abbots and hedge sorcerers. The order's subordinate commanders were doing what they could, but the bone giant's attack had been well timed. The snow was falling thick and fast, and many men would be lost in the storm. Festabite whipped around as he heard a high-pitched yowl. A beast of Nurgle collapsed in on itself as the Kopesh sliced through it. But its slimy secretions began to dissolve the ancient blade, and the bone giant was forced to leave what was left of the weapon embedded in the ground. Gurm roared out a command, and the remaining beasts of Nurgle galloped towards their new playmate, trailing mucus and other excrescences in their excitement. The bone giant staggered back as the beasts clambered up its frame, yelping jovially. Bone began to sizzle and burn as the acidic attentions of the beasts took its toll. For every one it flung aside, two more nuzzled at its form, eating through armour and sigil alike. After a few moments of murderous affection, the bone giant collapsed into a suppurating heap, and the beasts rolled across the snow, yapping in surprise.
"And that's the way you handle that,"
Gurm said, reclining on his palanquin. The Silverneth moaned as they carried their demonic master towards Walgus and Festabite.
"What chance of the dead against life unbound?" "More chances than just that," Festabite said. "How many did we lose?" "There's always more pus in the wound," Gurm said.
He blinked slowly.
"Besides, what price expedience? If it makes you feel better, I will take my brothers and scout ahead."
"Do that. We'll be making camp."
Walgus forestalled Gurm's mutter of protest. "The storm grows worse. We need shelter for the more fragile servants of our lord and master. We must make camp, else we'll have no army left come tomorrow." Gurm stared at him for a moment and then nodded.
"As you say, Blightmaster, I shall ensure that no more surprises await you in your chosen campground."
He thumped his palanquin and the Silverneth bore him away. Demons loped in his wake.
"He is angry," Festabite said.
"He is frustrated. Demons live in the moment. They know little of the business of day to day.
Gurm would have us march our army to death, and then question why we failed to overwhelm the enemy when we find them.
Walkus shook his head.
He is a great help in battle, and a great annoyance otherwise. If he hadn't been here, we might have lost more warriors than we did.
Festabite grunted, watching as the last remnants of the bone giant dissolved into a pale soup. Murky steam rose from it, and the snow had melted all around. Warriors prodded it with spears, as if to reassure themselves that it was no more.
It accomplished what it came to do, regardless,
Walgus said.
Another delay, another day lost to this wilderness. Gurm says we must press forwards, and quickly, though that is what he has been saying since we arrived in these cursed lands. But I am inclined to agree, if only because our foes seek to hinder us so obviously.
He turned in his saddle, scanning the storm.
Can you feel it, Festabite? We are being watched, gauged, and measured.
Festabite could and did. He glanced around, wondering what other horrors hid in the swirling snows. One bone giant had ruptured the column and delayed their holy work. What if there had been two or three? The crusade might have ended here and now. His hand tightened unconsciously on the hilt of his sword.
Let us hope we are not inadequate to the task, my lord, he said.
Walgus dropped an amiable fist on his pauldron.
Fear not, my friend. The Order of the Fly has never met a foe we could not best in battle or outlast in the field. Not the Root Kings in their halls of wood and stone, and certainly not the unquiet dead of these gloomy lands. We will free them from the tyranny of death and teach their peoples the true glory of sweet despair.
He gestured to the half-fallen waystones.
Take some men and see to smashing those stones. We will accomplish one task this day, at least. Yes, my lord,
Festabite said, not really listening. In the falling snow, he thought he saw something, a vast shape, thin and loathsome, with two hell-spark eyes burning like torches. The eyes stared through him, peeling away all that he was or ever had been. Then the indistinct shape turned and strode away into the murmuring depths of the growing storm, and was gone. And Festabite could not say that it had truly been there in the first place. The Blightmaster was right. They were being watched. Despite what Walgus believed, Festabite feared that they had already been judged and found wanting.
Chapter 5. The Gate Below. Every dead thing, every whispering shade, every rasping soldier of bone and gibbering carrion eater is mine. Every living bird, every breathing beast, every man, woman, and child. They all hear me, as you hear me, in your marrow, in your heart, and quavering spirit. Know this, whosoever believes in me, whosoever follows the will of Nagash, shall prosper. Listen and be joyful. The Epistle of Bone.
Nagash stood, a black mountain amid swirling snows. The lands around him were dead, full of bare trees and frost-coated rock. He had drawn the last ergs of life from this place and into himself to further bolster his dwindling might. The embers of his power stirred in the depths of him as his shattered consciousness coalesced in fits and starts. His mind, slipped and slid down rat warrens of painful memory, seeking the path to the present. He heard again the clangour of war as the armies of the enemy invaded his realm through the realm gates. Demons and mortal warriors alike poured into Shaiish in their untold millions. For every gate he closed, two more burst wide to vomit forth a ceaseless cavalcade of horrors. The dead were numberless, but the servants of chaos were limitless. The air had crackled with magic as chaos sorcerers strove against the black arts of his mortarchs. Chaos champions with blazing weapons and god-hardened skin had cut down the dead in their hundreds, only to be at last pulled under by a foe who could not die again. The unstoppable force met the immovable object, and Shaiish quaked to its very roots at the fury of their struggle. Once more he felt the impact of the demon blade as it crashed down against his temple, splitting bone. Nagash was no more wholly a thing of flesh than he was of spirit, and such a wound delivered by a normal foe would have been as nothing. But the three-eyed king was anything but normal. Four gods had poured their fury into him, and he blazed with a hideous strength. The blade he'd wielded had chewed apart bone and soul alike with greedy speed, gnawing at all Nagash was and ever would be, seeking to unravel the story of him. Iron claws dug gouges in ruined bone as the undying king clutched at his skull. An echo of that final, fatal moment still reverberated through the hollow places within him, and his titanic shape shuddered.
I am broken, and my realm with me.
His words echoed through the sepulchral air. Dead souls scattered, frightened by the thunder of his voice. He paid them no heed. How many times had he felt that same moment in his darkest dreams, repeated across ages and worlds? It was not always a demon blade. Sometimes it was a simple sword, enchanted beyond all measure. At other times, a hammer, glowing with ancient magic. But always, there was the blow to body and soul, and his mind, fragmenting, scattering, fleeing.
And yet I endure. Death cannot die, not while the stars wheel and the suns burn.
He was death. And death could not die, would not die. Let the realms spin apart and reality crumble. Nagash would endure, a black thorn thrust in the heart of worlds to come, just as he'd always done. But not without cost. There was always a price for survival, but it was a price he would gladly pay. A sudden clarity pierced the fog. He recalled what he had come here to do, though not why. He would remember, in time, a moment or a day. Time had little meaning to one who was outside its reach, and if he did not remember, loyal Arkan would surely remind him. For now, he was content to simply act. The enemy were caught by the storm he'd conjured. Their momentum stalled in the lowlands south of the Wailing Peaks. Now was the time to strike a mortal blow. One iron claw extended. Amethyst lightning crawled along the crudely forged facets before streaking off into the storm.
Awaken, Nagash said.
The snow whipped about him. The storm howled and something howled with it, a cry of denial and lunatic frustration.
So you would pit your will against mine.
Nagash spread his talons, and veins of purple light stretched out, piercing the clouds of frost. Anger strengthened his will, and his mind stiffened. Lucidity sliced through his mental fog like a razor, returning in an instant.
I defeated you easily in life. What chance do you have in death?
Deep within the snow, something shrieked. It was a sound of equal parts hunger and fear.
A good sound. Yes, remember. Remember who is master here and who is the slave. Now, awaken.
Hollow-eyed and wide-mouthed, ogres lumbered out of the storm. There were close to 100 of them, a once mighty tribe, reduced to eternal servitude by the will of the undying king. They slavered mindlessly as their frostbitten limbs clawed uselessly at the amethyst chains which looped about their thick necks and torsos. Nagash lifted his hand, drawing the sorceress bindings tight. Even so, they struggled, more out of stubbornness than anything else.
In life, you sought to poach upon my domain, to eat that which was forbidden. In death, I bound your bestial souls to the snows, so that, like the cold, you might never be sated.
The ogres, or rather these things which had once been ogres, howled and gibbered. Whatever dim thoughts they might once have possessed were long gone now, lost to centuries of unending hunger. They were one with the storm, the winter wind itself. Their simian shapes bled into one another, dissolving and reforming as they writhed in their chains. Nagash swept his hand out, dragging them to their knees.
You will listen. I will loosen your chains. You will feed. You will glut yourselves.
He spoke steadily, impressing his malign will upon the scattered flickering of soul fire. They shrieked and screamed, resisting with feral strength. Even dead and mad, they were stubborn beasts. But he was the undying king, and his will was as the will of the universe itself. He gestured, and the amethyst chains evaporated.
Go, feed and rejoice in my name.
The horde of hungry spirits turned, their forms billowing and fading, to rejoin the storm. But the wind howled with purpose now, and Nagash turned his mind from it, satisfied. He could not call up an army such as he might once have done, but he could delay the enemy and deny them a chance to rest. He could bleed them. These lands were filled with the detritus of a millennia of wars and skirmishes, and he would employ it all. The rest would be up to his Mortarks. He judged them more than equal to the task, whatever the quality of their tools. It was why he had chosen them to serve, after all. He looked up at the mad iridescence of the wraith moons and, for a moment, lost himself in the contemplation of those elemental forces which held them suspended. In dim, distant days, he had made a study of the mortal realms. They existed concurrently, bleeding into one another like rivers running into the sea. They were separated by the thinnest of membranes or the thickest of walls. In Shaish, the membrane was thinnest. All realms connected equally to his, for the dead, whatever their realm of origin, were drawn to Shaish and to his service. He could see the pathways into all of the realms. To the south, the warm green of Gairan. To the east, the harsh, coppery glow of Chamon. And above them all, past the wraith moons, the shimmering azure radiance of Sigmar's realm.
Azurite.
The memories flowed up like blood welling from a wound. A hand blazing like the heart of a star, dragging him up from the cairn where he'd lain insensate for millennia without number. The mountain-crushing convulsions of the last of the Hydragors as he drove the ferule of Alkanash, the staff of power, into its vast brain. his armour turning black from the blows of the Volk giants and Zephyr Nebdar, the Mortis Blade, growing impossibly warm in his grip as he hewed canyon-sized wounds in their colossal, continent-spanning bodies. Back to back, he and Sigmar had fought against impossible odds. They had been allies, twin gods, one light, one dark, born anew from the corpse of a half-forgotten world. Side by side, they had sought to impose order on the chaos which beset the fledgling realms. For a time, at least, the fire flared anew, stirred by rage. He threw back his broken skull and screamed in rage. Sigmar had betrayed him. His allies had betrayed him. Him! The living aligned against the dead. It had always been thus. They feared him, as well they should, for his glory could not be contained in a singular realm. Nagash was death, and death was a constant, whatever the realm. All souls were his, all life came to his kingdom in time, even that which was claimed by false gods and trickster spirits. The fire at his core grew hot, and the halo of bruised light which surrounded him flickered. He drew strength from his rage, battening on spite. They had dared to cripple him, to weaken him and leave him vulnerable. Archaon would never have attempted to invade had the Azurite not done so first, and thus left the way open. Sigmar had torn a wound in Shaiish, and the infection of chaos had slipped in. Once, great cloud banks of souls had drifted peacefully into his grip. But now, the dead knew no peace. Souls were trapped, like detritus in the wounds between worlds. They did not come to him, save on rare occasions. Many were drawn shrieking into the realms of chaos, or else lingered at their place of death, ignoring his summons with a tenacity which infuriated him. The corpse geometries were askew, and his calculations made false. He was no longer the Undying King, but a pretender to his own throne. He hissed in rage, and the wind writhed in sympathy. He lacked the strength to summon his servants in all their innumerable ranks, or to confront the foe openly. His hold on the upper world was tenuous at best. Until his body had recovered, he was confined to this wraith-like form, unable to affect the world, save indirectly. But he did not need a body to wage war. He did not even need a mind, or at least not a whole and healthy one. All were one in Nagash, and Nagash was all. The Dead Walkers and the Bone Giant had been but the first and least of his weapons. The spirits of snow and hunger were greater still, and he would use them all, from the least to the greatest. He spread his arms, and his will extended like the tentacles of some immense kraken, reaching out to stir dim, guttering embers of soul fire across the wide wilderness. All dead things in the north stirred, whether buried, drowned, or roaming. New fallen or older than the stars, they turned as one to heed him. Some with reluctance, others eagerly, but all turned regardless.
Come.
The word thundered through the marrow of the world. Broken limbs bent to the task, mouldering paws scrabbled at hard earth, and bodiless souls sped through bower and glen. The word of Nagash was inescapable and irrefutable. They would come in their numberless legions and fall upon the living. They would kill until there was only silence. The north would be at peace once more, undisturbed and as orderly as a tomb, at least for a time. For this would not be the last invasion. Distantly he could hear the enemy scrabbling in the dust of the Cairnlands, seeking to break the seals of the Starless Gate and flood into Styx. The gate was a massive edifice of stone and bone, wrought into a gigantic fortified entryway in ages past by the amethyst princes, as befitting the only open road into their deep realm. It was the single path by which the living might journey into Stygix, and its winding length had once played host to merchant caravans from Hellstone, Ossuary, and the Scarab City. Now in the shadow of the gate, battle raged. The slaves of darkness fought each other for want of other opponents, and their champions mocked the name of Nagash. Always they sought to undermine him, to undo all that he had accomplished. The dark gods feared him, for in him was the great inevitability made manifest. All things died, even gods. All things save Nagash. Nagash alone was eternal, inescapable, unavoidable. But their servants could not be allowed to gain entrance to the underworlds of Shaish, either through the Starless Gate or any of the 9 lesser gates, whose cycles of birth and death were known only to him and his Mortarks. Nothing could be allowed to interfere with his renewal, or to slow his return. Shaish was his. The dead of all the mortal realms were his. And he would defend what was his, even unto the destruction of all that was. He was death, and death could not be denied, only delayed. The storm roared up around him, its fury increasing with his own. And then, just as suddenly, it died down. The snows fell and the wind dipped. Lucidity shivered apart, leaving behind only numb introspection. Lost once more in his memories, preoccupied by what had been, Nagash turned and strode north. His form spread across the sky and faded into the darkness. "He is gone again," Arkan said, as the weight of Nagash's presence faded. He and Neferata stood on the ice, far from the shore and the broken citadel of the Rictus. The shivering sea spread out around them, a vast grey expanse of ice that stretched to the very horizon. Neferata nodded. "Of course he is. What was he up to? And was it any use?" They'd both felt the call. Nagash had long ago dispensed with any pretense of subtlety when it came to dealing with the dead. His voice was the rumble of an earthquake or the roar of a hurricane, drowning out everything else for as long as he spoke. The cunning conqueror of old was lost now, perhaps forever, subsumed by the force of nature he had become. "Some," Arkan turned. "He stirs the spirits of snow and hunger and the ancient guardians left behind by the broken kings, the malignants and deadwalkers as well. The enemy numbers are passed and pared away, as I planned."
"As you hoped," Neferata said.
She looked out over the ever-shifting, icy surface of the shivering sea. The crumbled remains of a once massive harbour clung to the shoreline. Frozen ropes creaked in the wind and tattered sails flapped mournfully. Seabirds perched on every surface, squabbling amongst themselves. Arkan inclined his head.
"Either way, our task is made easier."
"Easier, but still nigh impossible."
She stroked Nagadron's broad skull as the dread abyssal rubbed against her. Before Archaon wounded him, this would have been but the work of a moment. Now.
"You speak as if he is dead," Arkan said.
"Isn't he? You were at the Battle of Black Skies even as I was. I helped you carry what was left of him into the underworld. He is but a shadow of what he once was, and there is less of him every day. It is as if he is fading, becoming no better than one of those spirits which cling to him like wailing barnacles."
Arkan was silent. Neferata stared at him, willing him to speak. Finally, she said,
"What happens when he's dead? Truly dead?"
"He cannot die. What is death to one such as him?
A setback, nothing more. A moment of 1,000 years and he is returned. You know this, and yet you persist in questioning him.
Arkan looked at her.
Why?
A better question might be, why do you not?
Faith.
I call it cowardice. Nagash is a lie, Arkan. Like all gods, his power is built on falsehood. Comforting stories to convince the gullible. Neferata turned away as the ice shifted slightly beneath her feet. The Shivering Sea had earned its name fairly. From shore to shore it was a mass of compacted ice floes. The air was alive with a constant, booming crackle as the frozen waters bobbed continuously underfoot. In a way it reminded her of Nagash. Cold, predatory, and void of all humanity.
You have witnessed his power for yourself,
Arkan said.
I didn't say he wasn't powerful, did I? Merely that his godhood is an unsubstantiated claim, and nothing more.
Now you sound like Manfred.
Neferata hissed, low, even for you.
But true. It is your nature to question, I think. A simple predatory instinct to worry the throat and crack the bone. To dig for the softness within.
Arkan gave a rattling sigh. Neferata peered at him, eyes narrowed. Are you calling me simple? Arkan laughed.
Perish the thought, O queen of air and darkness. Merely pointing out that you are as he made you, as Manfred is, and as I am.
He made us treacherous, then? As well as ambitious?
Of course. I suspect that it is the thought of either you or Manfred taking his throne which drives him. You are the whetstones which sharpen the blade of his purpose.
Arkan looked at her.
I fear that purpose slumbers now. He is here, but he does not notice us. His mind was broken on the blade of the Three-Eyed King, and it is scattered across the realm.
But it is strongest here, in this place, isn't it? I can feel the weight of him on the air, like an oncoming storm. Neferata looked around. Is he listening now, do you think?
Possibly.
Why do you insist on meeting here, Arkan? Of what value is this place to us? There are better places for a last stand.
Like Hellstone?
Yes, or any one of 100 other citadels which yet remain standing. 6 kingdoms to the south owe fealty to me, and they would gladly take to the field in our name. Instead, we come here, to a snowy waste full of savages and ice. So there must be a reason. What is it? She didn't expect an answer. Not truly. Arkan could not resist being cryptic, even with her. It was his singular vice, if a dead man could be said to have such a thing.
Call it whimsy.
Do not play the fool with me. I can feel it, Arkan. As can you, a newborn gate to Stygix, somewhere far below us. Neferata tapped the ice with her foot.
Yes, it was born a few months ago. Not long after the fall of the basalt reach.
Arkan leaned against his staff.
I suspect it is the reason for this sudden invasion. The north holds little else of interest for the followers of chaos.
It could be a coincidence, Neferata said. Arkan looked at her. She shrugged. Don't give me that look, old bones. I breathe the very stuff of subterfuge, and even I know that coincidences can sometimes happen, especially when all of existence is in upheaval. Reality is dying a slow death, and such twists of fate grow ever more commonplace.
Does it matter? They come, and we must fight. At least until the gate ceases to be in a few months' time.
And what if it remains for a century? Will you stand here, on the ice, for 100 years? 200?
It will not.
They only last for 9 months. You know this.
And what if, by some magic, the ruinous powers hold it here? What if they prevent it from dying? How long will you stand watch?
I will stand as long as I must. As long as Nagash commands.
You sound like Tamra, Neferata said.
Arkan glanced at her. You take a special interest in that one, don't you?
She is powerful.
Is that the only reason?
Neferata chuckled.
Perhaps not.
But it is the only one I care to share with you. If she survives, she will make a powerful piece in the games to come.
And is that all they are to you? Pawns on a board?
Neferata eyed him. What are they to you?
Chattel, he said.
A lie, she said. I know you, Arkan, and I know that you are more kindly disposed towards the living than one might guess. They have a fire in them, one that has long been extinguished in you. You bask in their heat, seeking to rekindle that which you once were.
And so?
The fire inside burns hottest of all.
She leaned close.
Be careful that you do not burn yourself, old leash.
Arkan clicked his black teeth in dismissal.
Neferata drew back. Well, don't say I didn't warn you.
She looked up. There was no sign of Nagash, but that meant nothing. He was in the air and the cold. Despite her denials, she knew that Nagash permeated his realm in ways almost impossible to fathom.
Do you think he will help us when the time comes?
I suspect so.
He turned.
Look.
Neferata turned. The voivodes, led by Tamra, made their way carefully across the ice. They skirted the frozen timbers and tangles of ancient rope, which marked the remains of the sunken wharfs and docks of the Mandible, and trudged directly for the two Mortargs.
You have come to a decision, then?
The leash asked as they drew close.
We have, O Lord of Sacrament,
Aaron called, shouting to be heard over the ice.
We are agreed. The Rictus must stand and fight. If we are to be worthy of these lands, we must be prepared to defend them.
Well said,
Neferata clapped her hands.
Maybe so,
Bolgu said,
or maybe it's a fool's gesture.
The burly voivode looked around.
We do not have the men to make it more than that.
He glanced at Tamra.
Even counting the dead.
Neferata smiled. The other voivodes recognized their betters instinctively, and even if they had not, the rulers of the Drac were surrounded by the spirits of the drowned. Ghosts clung to her coat, weeping, or else leaning in close to whisper into her ears. It was said that where Nagash walked, the dead could not